Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Off the Wall podcast on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and our special guest this week is Gary Myers. Of course, he writes for the New York Daily News. He has a new book out called Coaching Confidential, and he's also part of our This Week in Football crew here on Yes. Gary, welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. How you doing?
We're great, and we figure, you know, we'll get to the book in a second. We just figured we'd start, obviously, because you're on This Week in Football and you've been involved with football for so long, Gary. I can remember watching you on This Week in the NFL with Len and Nick going back a ways, and you've been in my living room for so long, and now you're in the same building I'm in, so it's pretty cool to be talking to you right now, and your book is tremendous. We'll get to that, as I said, in a second. But first, the divisional round this week kicks off 4:30 on Saturday, and it's the Broncos and Peyton Manning taking on the Ravens in what could be Ray Lewis's last game in the NFL. It's just been a tremendous season, an MVP-type season for Peyton Manning coming back from all those neck surgeries. Do you see him as the head and shoulders MVP candidate, Gary, or do you find that maybe Adrian Peterson is up there and maybe surpassed him this year?
Well, I'll tell you, I voted for Peyton Manning. I have one of the Associated Press votes. And, you know, my feeling was that, you know, he took a team that was 8-8 last year, you know, playing most of the season with Tim Tebow, and they won 13 games this year. The AFC's number one seed. They won their last 11 games in a row, and he played as well as he's ever played in his career, which is, you know, pretty astounding, you know, when you consider that he didn't play at all last year. And he just raised the level of the play in Denver tremendously. So, he got my MVP vote.
Now, they're on an unbelievable run right now. 11 straight wins for the Broncos. Of course, they had the bye last week. As you said, they're the number one seed in the AFC. If they get by the Ravens this week, which I think they will, that's just my opinion, though, they potentially have a matchup with the last team that beat them in the regular season back on October 7th. That would be the New England Patriots. Do you think that's what everybody wants to see, Peyton Manning against Tom Brady once again?
Oh, no, I think everybody wants to see Joe Flacco versus Matt Schaub. Of course everybody wants to see that. I mean, that would be tremendous having Brady and Manning again. They've met three times in the playoffs so far. Brady's won twice. They've each won a championship game against the other. And then, you know, that year they went on to win the Super Bowl. It would be just an amazing story, a great story to have, you know, two of the all-time greats playing, you know, which could be the last time they ever meet in the playoffs. I mean, they both intend to keep playing for a while, but you never know, you know, when they would match up again. It would just be a great story, great theater, great for the NFL, and it would probably be really a terrific game. But, you know, when you look at these two games this weekend, if form holds, you'd certainly think that the Broncos will beat the Ravens, and that the Patriots, who beat the Texans by four touchdowns just last month in Foxborough, I think the game will be much closer this time. But, you know, I believe, you know, New England will come out and win that game. So, you know, the chances are we're going to see Brady versus Manning.
The late game on Saturday night is, of course, Aaron Rodgers going back home to take on his team that he rooted for growing up, the San Francisco 49ers. In fact, when he was 15 years old, that's the year Steve Young hits Terrell Owens in the end zone for that touchdown. And Aaron Rodgers was 15 at the time watching the game on television. And now he goes in, and I believe, Gary, this is the first time he's playing a game that means anything in Candlestick Park, where he basically grew up rooting for the 49ers. So this is going to be an interesting one. And you have Colin Kaepernick on the other side, who stepped in for the injured Alex Smith this season and has done a tremendous job. So this, the nightcap on Saturday, will really have the nation's attention.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, potentially is the best game of the weekend. Aaron Rodgers played a preseason game in 2008 at Candlestick Park. But like you said, Chris, that's the only time he's played in Candlestick. He grew up about 140, 150 miles from San Francisco in Chico, California, where he's a huge Niners fan, like you said. You know, in the 2005 draft, up until a day or so before the draft, it was really up in the air whether the 49ers, who had the first pick, were going to take Aaron Rodgers or Alex Smith. And Aaron, once the 49ers did not take him, he dropped all the way down to 24th. And I remember being at the draft and, it, you know, feeling sorry for him as he sat in that green room waiting to get his name called. And I think he goes into the game tomorrow with a big chip on his shoulder. And with a lot of family and friends there, and the knowledge or just the memory of his hometown team passing him over in the draft, I think he's going to be incredibly motivated. You know, as history has shown, the 49ers made a mistake. They should have taken Rodgers instead of Smith. But you know, at the time, and I remember this, at the time nobody thought that was a no-brainer by any means, and the fact that once San Francisco passed on Rodgers, he lasted all the way to the 24th pick, you know, is an indication of a lot of questions about him coming out of college.
Yeah, I remember, Gary, it's Joe Auriemma, by the way.
Hey, Joe.
I remember that draft well, and I remember the cameras just being on Aaron Rodgers sitting alone at those tables in the back room just waiting for his name to be called, and it was a stunning sight even for Aaron, who was just kind of sitting there as the picks were just rolling along, and he even kind of found a little humor in it in that draft. I remember that vividly. And you know, another quarterback that's got a lot to prove this weekend, is Matt Ryan. You know, they got a great Seattle team, a hot Seattle team, coming in, Russell Wilson, and company coming into, to Atlanta, to a team, that has a lot to prove. Mike Smith, finally gets the number one seed there. And now they have to go out and prove that they deserve that number one seed and win a playoff game.
Yeah, I think there's more pressure on the Falcons than probably any other team in the league, you know, simply because, you know, 0-3 in the playoffs, you know, Matt Ryan, Mike Smith, and 2 years ago they were the number one seed like they are now, and they got crushed at home by the Packers.
Right.
But, you know, Joe, the teams that they've lost to in the playoffs, you know, when you think about it, Arizona, they lost a tough game in Arizona a few years ago, and the Cardinals went on to play in the Super Bowl.
Right.
They lost to the Packers 2 years ago and the Giants last year, and both those teams went on to win the Super Bowl. So, it's, you know, whereas you can look at all three games maybe and say that they were upsets,
right,
or that the Falcons, you know, maybe should have won the game, you know, the fact remains that the teams that they lost to, you know, turned out to be pretty good playoff teams that year, and all three of them wound up in the Super Bowl and two of them won it.
Do you find it kind of odd that, you know, a lot of people are expecting, you know, from the pulse that I'm getting from this game is that people are saying, well, this might be another San Francisco-Seattle rematch in the championship game, and or Green Bay-Seattle. A lot of people are thinking that Seattle is going to kind of steamroll right through Atlanta. That's kind of the pulse that I'm getting. Are you feeling that vibe as well? And do you feel that that's a little bit crazy right now?
Well, you know, Seattle's kind of the cool pick right now.
Right.
Because, you know, they're red hot. They have of the three rookie quarterbacks who made the playoffs. They have the one that was drafted lowest, and he's the only one that's still playing. Their defense has been tremendous. They played in the best game last weekend of the four wild card games when they won in Washington.
Right.
And there always is a team that seems to, you know, make a run out of one of the wild card spots. So maybe it is Seattle this year. A lot of people, like you say, are picking them to win this game. I happen to think the Falcons are going to win this game. And I think they're going to be able to score on Seattle. And I base that on that in last Sunday's game, before RG3 got hurt, the Redskins were moving the ball. They moved the ball twice down the field on their first two possessions without much resistance from the Seattle defense. It was only after Griffin was pretty much playing on one leg.
Right.
The rest of the game that they shut down the Washington offense. So, and I believe that the Falcons offense is a lot more explosive than Washington's. They have, you know, two tremendous receivers in Julio Jones and Roddy White, and a Hall of Fame tight end in Tony Gonzalez, who's playing like he's in his prime. So, the strength of the Seattle defense and maybe the strength of the Seattle team is their secondary, and certainly the strength of the Falcons is their passing offense. That's a great matchup. It's the best matchup of any units in any of the four games this weekend. But I just happen to think that Atlanta's going to be able to throw the ball on them.
You know, Gary, you mentioned the Washington game that Seattle got through. I personally think that Shanahan was absolutely nuts for keeping RG3 out there as long as he did. You know, you could see after he took that hit in the first quarter that he wasn't the same quarterback. He started, you know, sailing passes over receivers' heads, and then finally the knee buckled. And to me, now with the ACL and LCL injuries that, you know, he's gotten the surgery on, he's brought an energy to that city, a city that hasn't had a lot of football hope in almost two decades, and I feel like Shanahan really put the future at risk by keeping RG3 in the game the way he did.
Well said, Joe, and I can't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. It was very perplexing to me. You know, I was at that game, and to watch RG3 so compromised physically, it was sad to me. I thought it was almost cruel to keep him out there. I know he wanted to play because all players want to play. And I know that the doctors, according to Shanahan, gave the okay for him to continue to play. But all you have to really do in that case is trust your eyes. And you can see that this was not the same player. In fact, I thought he was at risk because he couldn't move around. And he got hurt two plays before he threw his second touchdown pass. And then he went to the sidelines, he got taped up, and said he wanted to continue playing. And maybe he deserved the benefit of the doubt to play one more series and to see how he was moving around. But once we saw that he wasn't the same player, I think Shanahan probably cost the Redskins the game by keeping him in because he wasn't the same player. I mean, what makes him so special is his legs and the opportunities he creates in the passing game and the running game with his legs. And once that was taken away from him, they would have been better off with Kirk Cousins in that game, who had played well in his limited opportunities, and he's a rookie also. But he had played well, you know, in overtime against the Ravens, and then he started the next week in Cleveland, and they won that game. I think Shanahan would have been much better off trying to run his offense with a healthy quarterback than to try to run it with a guy who clearly was limited.
All right, we're talking with Gary Myers, writes for the New York Daily News, also on This Week in Football on the YES Network, and has a new book out called Coaching Confidential. Gary, reading the book, tremendous read. There are a lot of things that stick out to me. I just want to touch on a couple of these stories because I know our time is limited here, but I just wanted to let you know that I found the Parcells, Belichick, and Carroll and their relationship with Robert Kraft. I thought that was very intriguing. The Tony Dungy chapter also. But one of the biggest things in this book was, you know, not a lot of people think about it, but the Cowboys' success under Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson and how much more they could have had if Johnson stuck around. And the biggest part of that marriage down in Dallas was that Herschel Walker trade. And you go into it in depth, and if you really don't know anything about this Herschel Walker trade, this really puts the Cowboy dynasty back then on the map. If you didn't know about it back then, do yourself a favor and get this book and read about it now. Because that one trade, as you said in the book, Gary, affected 60 players, and it allowed Jimmy Johnson to bring in Emmitt Smith, Darren Woodson, Russell Maryland, amongst others. And you know, it's just the way that Cowboy dynasty was born. My question to you is, if Jimmy Johnson hangs around and he coaches past 1994, if he sticks with the team and Jerry Jones doesn't make his outlandish comment about 500 coaches could have done what he did, how many more could the Cowboys how many more Super Bowls could they have won?
Well, I look at it like this, Chris. They won in 92 and 93, and then in the spring of 94, Jimmy left. They brought in Barry Switzer, who was retired at that point, and the Cowboy talent was good enough to overcome Switzer's coaching and get to the NFC Championship game that year, which they nearly won in San Francisco. They fell behind, I think it was 21-0 or something like that.
and came back and nearly won the game. And then the following year, they did win the Super Bowl when they beat Pittsburgh. So they won 3 out of 4. If you look at this realistically, their talent was so much better than every other team's that I have to believe they would have won 3 in a row. And then that was also the beginning of free agency. So they were getting picked apart. Their depth was getting picked apart somewhat, because that's what happens to successful teams. You can't afford to pay everybody, and the backups want to be starters and get paid. So you start to lose the depth. But Jimmy was so good in the draft that he just would have maneuvered his way into multiple picks and start to replenish the talent, which is cheaper, and then you control them for 3 or 4 years. And so I really believe they would have won 3 in a row. And then the fact that they won in the fourth, would have been the 4 in a row with Switzer, you'd have to think that, if Switzer can win it, then I think Jimmy would have won it. So I'm looking at that they were good enough and their best players were young enough. I really believe if you look at that situation, Chris, I think they could have won 4 in a row. And then you never know what would have happened after that. Teams catch up to them. They start to lose a lot of players. Some of the draft choices don't work out as well. But their core talent on that team was so good that the fact that they won 3 out of 4, I don't think it's a big reach to say if Jimmy stayed, they would have won 4 in a row.
Right, and it's also the fallacy of the predetermined outcome, too. You don't know what would have happened, obviously. But Jimmy Johnson with that Herschel Walker trade and how he rebuilt that team from a 3-13 team when Tom Landry left and a 1-15 team, Johnson's first year to what he built that team into in just a short amount of time, his fourth and fifth year winning those Super Bowls, you would have to think that Johnson would have been all over free agency and would have been able to fill the spots that the Cowboys needed to fill in order to keep that going. But as he said in the book, he was a gypsy and he was planning on leaving the Cowboys in 94. He never really wanted to stay anywhere more than 5 years. But, that comment, you go back to it with Jerry Jones, who, by the way, is still the general manager of the Cowboys. And fans in the NFC East could just root for him to continue to be the general manager. But he said 500 coaches could have won with the Cowboys talent. He's still trying to find one of those 500 coaches since Barry Switzer won that last Super Bowl. And, I thought you said something very poignant in the book, and that was he let his heart do the speaking, not his head do the thinking. So I think that really boils it down to what happened in that Cowboy situation. And we'll never really know. And they're friends now. They hang out. They go to boxing matches and whatever. But who knows what might have been. Now, moving on.
Chris, I just want to say one
thing. Yeah, go ahead.
The point of what, Jerry's saying, 500 coaches could have won with the Cowboys' talent. What he's overlooking is that Jimmy Johnson is the one who accumulated
to go with Bill Parcells and, you have to let the person shop for the groceries if he's going to cook the dinner. Johnson was shopping for the groceries and cooking, five-course excellent meals. It was a 5-star restaurant when he ran the Cowboys, and Jones got rid of that, and it just really, as you said, there were two Super Bowl-sized egos, and they couldn't fit in the same building. And it's a shame because, you don't have that greatness anymore, really, in the NFL. You don't have those dynasties. And, of course, as you said, free agency kind of takes that away. But it would have been, even as a Giant fan, looking back on those days, I'd rather see the Cowboys go off and win rather than the 49ers. So keep it home in the NFC East. But having said that, let's just move on because I don't want to talk about the Cowboys winning anymore. but the next thing, before we let you go, and the next thing that really stuck out to me in the book was John Elway, and how Ernie Accorsi and the Colts who drafted him in 1983, and how the trade that Irsay made behind Accorsi's back and Cush's back, Frank Cush, the coach of the Colts at the time, Accorsi's watching TV and he sees that his number one draft pick has been traded away to the Broncos. And then Accorsi he goes to the Browns, he leaves the Colts after that. One of the funniest things, in the book is Irsay going up to Accorsi before the draft and saying, look, the Patriots want to trade us John Hanna and a 15th round pick for John Elway. And Accorsi said, okay, there's going to be 2 press conferences, one to announce the trade and one to announce my resignation.
Right.
I thought that was tremendous. And, he leaves after that year after they trade Elway to the Broncos, and then he goes to the Browns. And then Elway beats his Browns three times in the AFC Championship game, so of course he can't get away from it. But the football gods came back to Akorsi, of course, and they gave him Eli Manning, who it was an eerily similar situation, Gary, when Eli came into the league.
Well, it was very similar because Elway, you know, didn't want to play in Baltimore and forced his way out. And then, you know, 20-some-odd years later, Eli didn't want to play in San Diego. They drafted him just like Baltimore drafted Elway. The only difference was they traded Eli to the Giants about 2 hours after they picked him, where Elway was a Colt for about a week or so.
Right.
But I remember doing a column that I called Elway a couple of days after the 04 draft and just had him talk about Eli's situation and the similarities to it. And obviously, it worked out great for Denver. Elway got him to 5 Super Bowls. He didn't win any until he won his last 2 in the last 2 years of his career. And, you know, Eli's 2 for 2 in the Super Bowl. And there were a lot of years there early on when we really questioned whether Ernie made the right decision, you know, especially because he could have had Ben Roethlisberger and kept all his picks.
Right.
And Ben was a better player than Eli early in his career. But, you know, if you tell every Giant fan on the day of the 2004 draft after they made the trade for Eli that by the end of his 8th year, and now is at the end of his 9th year, but by the end of his 8th year, he will add 2 trophies to the trophy case at the Giants facility. There isn't a Giant fan that wouldn't have signed up for that. And, you know, if Eli doesn't win another, and, you know, we don't know what the future holds, but if he doesn't win another, then that trade obviously was well worth it, because if you can win 2 Super Bowls for your team, you've done your job.
Absolutely, Gary. That's Gary Myers. He's on This Week in Football on the YES Network. They will be on throughout the Super Bowl week, and Gary will be a part of that show throughout the season. Also writes for the Daily News, of course, and has the new book out called Coaching Confidential. Do yourselves a favor. Go pick it up. Not only is it a great read and an entertaining read, Gary, I found that, you know, you tend to read a chapter, 2, 3, and then you put it down for a while. Say, I'll put it down. This one, you know, you start with Sean Payton and the same situation on Bountygate. Then, you know, you get to Parcells, Belichick, Carroll, and Kraft. Well, I can't put it down yet. Then you go to Tony Dungy. Well, I can't put it down yet. Then you go to Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson. Well, I got to read about Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson. It's just that kind of book that it keeps you going, and it's a great read. And you talk about Shanahan, Vermeil, Brian Billick, and Rex Ryan. It just keeps you going. Gary, it's a great read. Great job with the book. Thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it. And hopefully the book does very well for you.
Well, Chris, I can't tell you how much, you know, I appreciate those nice words, and I enjoyed being on with you and Joe, and we'll see you soon.
All right. Hopefully we get you back on before the NFL season ends. That's Gary Myers. We'll see you next time here on the Off the Wall podcast, everybody.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.